Now becomes the lecture of the 23rd of March, 1905. Rudolf Steiner starts. He says, before I conclude this winter's lecture cycle with a picture of the future of mankind and the ideals of mankind, I would like to speak today of the spiritual life of the present time as it expresses itself in one of the most significant spiritual heroes of our age. Not from a literary standpoint, not from an aesthetic standpoint, but from the standpoint of a world conception, I would like to speak of Ibsen's type of mind. Because, factually, everything which the deepest spirits of our present age feel and think are expressed, particularly in Ibsen. One has often said that every poet is the expression of his time. Certainly, this proposition is valid. However, only when one gives a special content to this proposition that every poet is the expression of his time, only when you give a special content to that expression can it really be understood, or can he be understood. Likewise, as Homer, Sophocles, and Goethe are the expressions of their time, so it is without doubt that Henrik Ibsen is the expression for the present time. Nevertheless, how quite differently does our age imprint itself in him, as the other people I mentioned, Homer, Sophocles, and Goethe, were expressions for their period. In order to understand how quite differently the time was round about the turning point of the 18th century, the time of Goethe, Schiller, and Herder, and quite differently our time expresses itself, to understand that difference, all you need to do is to put two things side by side. Goethe was then able to end the second part of his Faust. He seals the second part of his Faust and leaves it behind as a great testament of his life. Leaves it behind as a testament full of forces which illuminate into the future. Does he leave behind him, after death, in the following faith, no trace of my earth period can pass away in the eons? And so, a human being who in the main is a representative of the whole of mankind that stands before us in Faust. We hold on to Faust. We fill ourselves with his life content, with his life force. Right beyond his death does Goethe point towards. Faust can't become old. More and more do we find within Faust deep truths. We perceive Faust as something which continues to live on, something which we have not completely exhausted, something which will find its life conclusion sometime in the future. That's how we can characterize Faust. Now, Henrik Ibsen, long before his death, he concluded his life work with his drama, When We Dead Shall Awake. Wenn wir Toten erwachen, when we shall awaken the dead. while that which for half a century filled human beings, that which was present as revolutionary ideas and other ideas, all that passed through the soul of Henrik Ibsen. He depicted that which moves the hearts, what it brings the hearts into separation, which permits the hearts to battle, confront themselves in a existence battle of a type which never happened before. How a great Rückblick, looking back, works this drama and stands there as a symbol for the artist himself. He was a hermit in human life, a hermit in his own life. For half a century, he sought for the happiness of man and for truth. He didn't spare any forces in order to achieve light and truth, to acquire an explanation of the great riddle questions. Now he himself awakens. He feels that which lies behind him as something dead, something which had died away, and he decides to write no longer. It is a looking back which points to the past, and that which he yearns for appears to him as something of a riddle nature, something which really was not there. The ideals collapse behind him. There he awakens. He doesn't know any further. That is the poet which is the representative of our age, who produces something of a grandiose nature. A critique is this life balance of all that which we have, a giving oneself up, and at the same time, an awakening out of our age into a critique of our age, a powerful survey of modern life expresses itself in this drama. If we hold this drama in front of us, then we will understand the tragic element in the personality of this poet, this Dichter, this writer, because Henrik Ibsen is a tragic personality. If you want to understand him completely, you must be able to grasp him as a representative of our age. Hence, I don't want you to consider it as some intellectual cleverness when I, in the first place, attempt to take hold of the nerve of our period, because Henrik Ibsen is an expression of the nerve of our period, the nerve, the intimate nerve of our period. One word characterizes our age, and that word also characterizes the whole of Ibsen, and the word is Persönlichkeit, personality. Indeed, also Goethe had said that the highest good fortune of the children of the earth is still the personality. However, with Ibsen, this occurs in still quite a different way. Ibsen is a child of our age, and from here out shall we be able to understand him the best. Just try to remind yourself how quite differently personality stands there in ancient Greece. How does Oedipus stand there? Far out does it reach that which the destiny which moves the destiny of Oedipus, that moves itself over his whole race. We must draw in the threads into quite other regions. The destiny reaches wide beyond, over, transcends his single personality. It's lifted itself up above the personality. Noch nicht herausgehoben ist das Persönliche. Not yet has there lifted itself up this personality, this personal element, out of the ethical connections with the whole world. That's the difference from today, that we now have to look for in the center point of the personality, that destiny has been transposed into the personality. We can follow that piece by piece. With the rising up of Christianity, it occurred that the urge of the personality wants to satisfy itself. The personality wants to be free. Free at least from the highest, from the divine. The connections want to be torn apart. The personality wants to stand itself upon itself. And right through the Middle Ages, the personality attempts to take hold of itself. How deeply is there still connected in Greece? The whole of the surrounding world is still deeply connected with the personality. And how man gradually grows out of that which surrounds him. But in Greece, man grows out of his surroundings. In Greece, man has been born out of the whole cosmos and the external configuration of Greek life is like a work of art. Plato creates the idea of a state in which each individual should insert himself as a participating member, as a member of a whole body. Christianity brings up another ideal. However, this new ideal is purchased with the price of the connection with nature. This other ideal is sought for not in connection with nature, not in unity with nature, but it is sought for above nature. The Christian seeks for that which should release his personality, which should redeem his personality, save his personality into something which transcends the personality. The single Roman felt himself still as a member of the whole state system. The single Roman is first a citizen and then a man. In the Middle Ages, there dominates a soul mood which looks out beyond the surrounding world. It looks up to another world, a transcendent world, to which one wants to attach oneself to. And that makes a great difference for the whole human thinking, feeling, and willing. And this continues to develop itself right into the modern age. The Greek, the Roman citizen, lives and dies for that which surrounds him, for that which expresses itself in his external world. In the Middle Ages, there still lives Indeed, not in the surrounding world, but there lives in that which streams over from the divine into the gospel of the free tidings, the gospel of the word of God. There lives something of a divine world order, and it brings it to expression as in a mirror. In the best of the souls, as well as in the simplest souls, in the mystics, just as in the general population, there lived this divine world ordering. It is something which indeed is given from the external, but which is something which lives as something new arising in the soul. That which occurs in the world of the stars as the will of God, that fills the soul with a content. One knows what is on the other side of birth and death. We take the modern age and in the first place cast our glance from the artistic standpoint upon Shakespeare. That which comes to expression in the dramas of Shakespeare, and above all lives in these dramas, is the character. Now, something like that it did not exist in Greece nor in the Middle Ages. Shakespeare's dramas are character dramas. The main interest attaches itself to the human being. It connects itself to that which occurs in the depths of his soul as he is placed in the world. The Middle Ages did not possess an actual dramatic drama because human beings were occupied with other interests. But now the personality begins to draw itself up. However, at the same time, everything of an indefinite, of an ungraspable element of the personality. Just take Hamlet, for example. You can read so many theses from different people, different ideas. About no work has so many books been written as about Hamlet. And that emanates from the fact that this character itself possesses something in itself of an indefinite nature. It's no longer the reflection of the external world as in ancient Greece. It is no longer the reflection of the tidings of God as in the Middle Ages. Something else, something of an indefinite nature, begins to show itself in the character of Hamlet, and that's why so many books have been written about Hamlet. The whole way of conception and perception of the modern age assumes this character. Just consider the figure of Kant, how everything is transposed into the personality. What he says would not have been possible in the Middle Ages. What he says would not have been possible in antiquity. He represents and presents something quite unbestimmtes, something indefinite, indeterminate. Execute your actions so that your actions could be the pattern for everybody else's actions. However, this ideal still remains something quite indefinite. He says, we cannot cognize. We have limits beyond which, with our reason, we cannot stride over. He perceives this as something dark and dim, something which pushes and drives. He perceives it as something inside of a dim, dark nature, but nevertheless it drives and pushes, and he calls it the categorical imperative. Now the Greek, the Middle Age person, the Middle Ages, the person of the Middle Ages, he had quite definite, sharply contoured ideals. He did not only know that he ought to live as other people in their sense, not only was it only a question of knowledge, other people lived in his blood. But now that became different. Here we have now a categorical imperative which possesses no real content. That categorical imperative places itself before the reason. This soul is not filled at all with definite ideals. So was it in the 18th century. In our classics, in our classicers, in our classic people, the classics, something awakened which yearned for definite ideals in the classic period of Central Europe. It's very interesting that Schiller, who was not less a rigid acid critic of his type, of his age, than Ibsen. Schiller was just as a strong critic of his time as Ibsen was. Just consider his work, The Robbers. Karl Moore wanted to create something definite. He wanted to create people who can transform their age and not remain just critics. It's interesting that Schiller has a trust to ideals. And he says, does not matter how the world could be, I place human beings within this world who are able to lift this world up out of its pivot. Still much more significant does this occur with Goethe in his Faust. Goethe appears here as a spirit who is able to perceive into a new dawn. However, now came the 19th century with its demand for freedom, for personality. What is freedom? In what is man supposed to be free? One must want something definite. But it was freedom in itself which human beings wanted. In addition to that, the 19th century became the most rationalistic. The human beings see their environment, but no ideas streams out of their environment. Human beings are no longer carried by ideals. Man stands on the peak of his personality. The personality itself has become the end in itself. And because of that, mankind is not able to make a distinction between two concepts. It cannot distinguish between individuality and personality. It can no longer separate that which must be separated. Now, what is individuality? Individuality is that which rises up full of content in the world. If I have a content-filled future thought, if I make a picture of that which I insert into the world So my personality can be full of power or weak. But it is the carrier of these ideals, the sheath of my individuality, the totality of all these ideals is the individuality which illuminates itself out of the personality. However, the 19th century does not make this distinction. It sees in the pure, force-filled personality, in that which should be the actual vessel, it sees the end in itself in the pure, power-filled personality. That which should actually be the vessel, the container, it sees as the end in itself. Because of that, the personality becomes something nebulous. And with that, there becomes something which earlier on was ether clear. That something which earlier on was ether clear becomes something of a cloudy, misty nature. Earlier on, mysticism was called mathesis, because mysticism earlier on was just as clear as 2 times 2. Man lived in such a spiritual content. He went into himself. He found something which was higher than his personality. He cognized his individuality. The 19th century cannot understand mysticism. It talks about mysticism as if it was something of an unclear thing, something which can't be understood. Now, this is something which was necessary. The personality had to arrive at a point when it should feel itself as a hollowed out shell. Today, one speaks a great deal of personality. However, of real personality, there is very little present. There, where the personality is filled by the individuality, there one speaks at least about it. One speaks at the most of that which is not there. And hence, when the 19th century speaks about mysticism, it speaks about something which is unclear. And we understand why things came to that situation. As a son of his age, Henrik Ibsen deeply gazed down into this personality and this period. As an honest seeker for truth, is he trying to get to the true content of the personality? But he does it in a way compatible with someone who was born completely out of his time, out of his age, someone born out of his age. That's how he does it. Although he tries very hard, he's limited by his age. How would have ancient Roman spoke about resht, about right, the life of rights? To him, it was something self-understood. Just as little as he could deny light, so little could he deny the right, the life of rights. But in the case of Ibsen, you have the question, the recht, the life of rights? Where can we find the real existence of a life of rights? Here we see everything determined by power. It's a fundamentally revolutionary spirit. He gazes into the human breast, and he found nothing there. Everything which the 19th century gave birth to was really nothing for him. And he expresses it like this. Ah, how these ancient ideals of the French Revolution have lost their power. Today we need a revolution of the whole human spirit. This is the soul mood which expresses itself in the dramas of Ibsen. Let's try to consider once more the ancient times. The Greek felt himself very well into his polis, P-O-L-I-S. His polis, P-O-L-I-S. It must mean the Greek felt himself connected with his city, I imagine. The Roman felt himself in his state, the state itself. The man of the Middle Ages felt himself as the child of God. How does the son of the modern age feel himself? He finds nothing around him which can carry him. The man of Greece, the man of the Middle Ages, never felt himself as a person alone, a lonely person. However, in Ibsen, the strongest man is the most lonely. This feeling of aloneness, loneliness, is something absolutely of a modern nature. And out of this, there awakens the art of Ibsen. And the concept, nevertheless, which speaks to us out of the dramas of Ibsen, we must appeal to the human personality. It's nothing clear. This force in the human being, which should be laid bare, it is something of an indeterminate, indefinite nature. But to this indeterminate, indefinite thing, we must turn ourselves. And so Ibsen, upon such paths, seeks to understand the human beings around him. And so, what can one see anything else other in his age as the battle of the personality which is torn out of all social connection? Indeed, there's a second possibility. When the human being still hangs together with the state, when the human being still hangs together with the environment, to which the personality bows itself down, denies itself. Now man stands there only for himself, and so there arise disharmonies between the personality and the environment. Ibsen had a very sharp feeling sense for the untruth of these connections between man and his environment. And so the searcher for truth becomes the sharp critic of the lie. Hence his heroes become uprooted personalities. And those who want to represent their connection with their environment, they must fall into a state of lies. They can only do their self-consciousness through deception. They can represent or establish their connection with the environment only by a deception, a täuschung of their self-consciousness. In the dramas of Ibsen's middle period, this soul mood lives. We see this if we permit to pass before our eyes his Brand, his Peer Gynt, his Emperor and the Galilean. We find in the latter dramas a pointing to three periods. The first is that which we have characterized previously, that of the past, where the external form was so much valid. The Emperor Julian, he looks over into the second, that of the Galilean, the man from Galilee, who points to a making inward of the soul. However, a third period is supposed to come, where man again has these ideals. These ideals express themselves, imprint themselves into the external from out of the inner being. Earlier, destiny came from the outside inwards. But what must be yearned for are the inner ideals which the strong human being can imprint upon the world. He is supposed to be a Zendbota, an emissary. He is supposed to create not by imitation, but he should not just be an imitator, but he should be a creator. He should be able to be an imprinter. Now the third period in which the ideal comes to its validity, that is not yet reached. In his loneliness, man finds it within his soul, but it is present in his soul not in such a way that it has power and force to configure the world. This uniting of Christianity with the ideals of antiquity, that is the reversed way. Ibsen placed this ideal upon a weak soul, which breaks under this. Julian is just only the man of the past. Again, we are concerned here with the human being who rests upon the pure formal nature, on the hollowed outness of the personality. Nothing is more characteristic for Ibsen as the way in which Ibsen placed the hard, gnarled figure of his Brand into our age. This Brand is an evil man, evidently. This Brand is not despotic, he's not autocratic, but he has been torn out of the connection with the environment world. He stands there as a Geistlicher, as a cleric, surrounded by human beings whom the connection with the divine could have become into a lie. Besides him, there stands a cleric who, that which he can believe, he believes because in the main he only believes it, because in the main he doesn't possess a strong faith, free feeling of faith. An ideal which is something higher, that must be able to work upon all human beings. The ideal of brotherliness, that immerses human actions in mildness, gentility, and goodness, and sees in every human being the brother of man. But as long as this ideal is not yet born, and man must support himself upon the scraps and the residues of the ancient ideals, which intermix personality, confuse personality and individuality. As long as these ideals are not yet born, man appears hard and unyielding. Who places the personality ideal so high becomes hard and unyielding as Brand becomes. And he must be like that. The individuality unites. The personality separates. This passage, this Durchgangspunkt, this point of passing through the personality, bloßlegt, manifests those forces which must be developed. Otherwise, nothing will come out of it. We must lose the old ideals in order to give birth to them upon a higher stage. A poet like Ibsen must penetrate into this personality and present it as something which is hollowed out. And he does this in a grandiose way in his Bund der Jugend, the Union of Youth, Bund der Jugend. That's the title of his literary production. What works on the personality, what this personality should represent purely, this Ibsen presented in his later dramas, in which he becomes a positive critic of his age, as in his Stutzen der Gesellschaft, the supports for society. He shows a personality in a Zwiespalt, in a Zwiespalt, a union, discord. It's a Zwiespalt is a disunion, a discord, a schism, an inner conflict. In Brand's production of Gespenstern, the ghosts, he shows the personality in the inner conflict with its environment. In conflict with her environment, Frau Alving must there fall into lies where she is searching for the truth in order to bring her son to a correct atmosphere. So the destiny breaks over her as in the ancient Greeks. Ibsen lived under the sign of Darwin. And this Oswald does not stand in a spiritual, ethical connection with the Vorhergegangenen. This Oswald doesn't stand in a spiritual, ethical connection with the preceding, but he stands in the heredity. His personality can only, as far as it is soul, this personality, as far as it is a soul, can only be torn out of its environment. The corporeality stands in connection with the physical heredity. So there breaks a destiny which streams purely out of the physical laws, breaks over Oswald Alving. It breaks out like a moral, divine, spiritual aspect, just as breaks out over Oswald Alving, just as over the antique heroes, there broke out over them a moral, divine, spiritual. That's it. So is Ibsen completely a son of his age. So also he shows that which is justified in this personality. The personality which later on shall become again an individuality. in a quite special way, this problem confronts us in the woman. Nora lives, as it were, in Puppenheim, in a doll's house, and grows out of it, looking for the way to individuality. All of the ancient world conceptions have established a natural differentiation between man and woman, and that continues itself right into our age. In order to strip this away, the passing through point, must be found through the personality. It's only when man and woman have experienced the same thing in the personality are they able to develop the same individual element in order that they could go into the future side by side as comrades. As long as man fetches in the ideals from the external, so were they united with the world of nature. And in nature, there is rooted the difference between man and woman. This difference between man and woman, which is rooted in nature, can be equalized and harmonized only in the soul. Out of nature, this contrast was carried into religion. Also, still in the Middle Ages, insofar as the divine itself still maintained an after echo of the world of nature. And so we find in the ancient religions the male principle and the female principle standing side by side as something which permeates the whole of existence, which lives and weaves in the whole of nature. We find it in Osiris and Isis, even in the Father God and Maria. It's only when man has stripped away the basis of nature, only there, when man presses forth to the soul and emancipates this soul, only then can the personality in the human being win itself to freedom in such a way that it doesn't attach itself to any differentiation between man and woman. Only then first will the contrast between the male and female be overcome. And the poet of personality has also to find the characteristic word for that. And as a problem, that differentiation raised itself up in Ibsen in such dramas as Nora, Rosmersholm, and The Woman of the Ocean. And so we see how Ibsen hangs together, is connected with all that which constitutes the greatness of our age, even if perhaps it also is the emptiness of our age. The more Ibsen looks into the future, the more does he feel how the emptiness has to enter if the personality is to be emancipated, however separated from its divine spiritual connections. And so, in Ibsen's Baumeister, the Architect, Solness, Ibsen stands himself in front of the problem of personality with the great question of the future. The personality will be made free. However, to what end? Something of an indefinite, indeterminate nature remains in this searching towards the essential element. as a real searcher for the truth. He presents this unknown element as in a symbol in his Woman of the Ocean. This woman becomes free. Free to what? One must further ask. And this is presented symbolically in a wonderful way. And when Ibsen still further tried to gaze still further into the riddle of life in his little Eyolf, and When We Awake the Dead, there disappears from him that deep element in the human heart which he previously had believed in. The sculptor who wanted to get hold of the ideal is seized by doubt. Still, he cannot form the free human being. Distorted animals rise up before him. He is searching for something which is able to lift himself up above that. He wants to creatively form a resurrection. He wants to create a resurrection. But nevertheless, more and more the distorted element appears before his eye. And when it becomes clear to him that he cannot overcome this, he awakens and he sees that which our time lacks. He sees that which our time does not possess. And so an immensely tragic moment is placed before us in his drama, When We Awaken the Dead. And so Henrik Ibsen is a keen prophet of our age. Nevertheless, he does indeed feel in his deepest heart, nevertheless, something of a future element which must exist, which will carry the human being beyond the personality. However, he remains silent, and this silence contains in itself something of an immense tragedy. That person who has made himself familiar, made known to himself, that which is able to lift, that which in the personality is able to lift itself beyond birth and death. The person who has entrusted himself with the understanding of the great laws of karma, that person can find a new content also in the personality, in the personal. He can erect a new ideal. He can stride beyond the personality and make himself a confessor, an adherer of this great law of the harmonizing justice. Man of antiquity trusted himself to the reality around him. He built himself with that. He built the supports of his soul upon the reality around him. The man of the Middle Ages experienced the ideal in the inner being of his soul. Modern man has sunk down into the loneliness of his personality, into his egoity. He still nevertheless feels a categorical imperative, but he feels this as something indeterminate, indefinite, dark. He strives towards a personal freedom, but there rises up in him the question, for what purpose shall this personality be made free? The ancient ideals can say nothing more to our age. New ideals must arise. a Freiheit, a Freihoodness, which is no longer connected to a personal arbitrariness, a Freihoodness, a freedom, which again unites itself with divine ideals, to lead mankind up to this goal. This is the purpose of spiritual scientific world conception. And to work upon that, to build up this new future, that represents a spiritual life as is presented by anthroposophical world conception. It's only when the best people of our age could point into this spiritual scientific world conception, which roots itself in cosmic reality, only when the best people of our time realize this, can they have the significance which they must have. And when a great person is kept silent in that tragic reticence, a person just as a person, just like Henrik Ibsen, who shook up the spirits, here you have an indication. Towards the end of his years, towards the end of the 19th century, did he write his When We Awaken the Dead. Indeed, surely now it is the time that the words of Goethe should realize themselves. And he quotes, "But if you do not possess this dying in order to become, then you are a very sorry guest upon this dark earth." It indeed is the time, now is the time in which we live, that we again shall become a personality, but to an emancipated personality, to individuality. He ends the lecture.